Audible and the Light of Candle podcast. Welcome to the OA Light of Candle meeting podcast. Visit our website at oalaig.org, where you'll find links to prior podcasts from this meeting available in multiple formats. The opinions expressed on the Light of Candle podcast are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Veronica B.
Hi, I'm Veronica. I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic. And I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you, Lisanne. Take a little drink. I've been dying to take a drink. Because I feel nervous. My heart's pounding so fast. Okay. I spoke last week, and this gentleman said to me at the end of the meeting, he goes, "You should work on your pace," because I was talking too fast. So now I'm going to try to slow down. So, okay. So I'm Veronica. I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic. Hi, everybody. I came into Overeaters Anonymous about 15 years ago. I came in broken, desperate. I could not stop eating and throwing up. Food was my master. All of my thoughts evolved around food. It seemed like whenever I had any kind of problem or circumstance, I always used food as an excuse to eat. And food just did something for me that nothing else did for me. And in the big book, it says that you know, men and women drink because they like the effects produced by alcohol. Well, I like the effects produced by certain foods. And, you know, it took me a long time in Overeaters Anonymous to really understand that I have allergy to certain foods. And that once I start eating them, like, I can't stop eating them. And, like, and they set up a phenomenal craving for me. I didn't want to accept that about my disease of compulsive eating. So it took me a long time in these rooms to accept my condition and that I'm different than my fellows as far as eating is concerned. And I came into Overeaters Anonymous. I was 3.5 years sober. So I got sober in AA. And I had a sponsor. But I would go to the meetings and I would think about eating and throwing up. Like I would be thinking about like where am I getting my next binge? And that's all I was thinking about. The obsession to drink had been removed. And I did not understand why I was still having this behavior of eating and throwing up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I had a God that took away the obsession to drink. So why didn't he take away this obsession from me to eat and throw up? You know, I was really baffled by it. I thought that, you know, working the 12 steps was going to solve all my problems, you know, when I came to AA, but that's not my story. But just a little bit about my past is I'm the oldest of four girls. I have two older brothers. My parents are immigrants from Mexico. And growing up in my household was really crowded. Like, I hated that I had to share everything. I had to share my bed. I had to share my clothes. I had to take care of my younger siblings. I hated that. I felt like it was too much responsibility on me. And because my mom was the first one to immigrate from Mexico, she got the house. So all the other uncles and the aunts came after her. And, like, they would always stay with us at some point or another. And so we always had a house filled with people and adults. And these adults always told me how to live. They told me how to behave. They, to me, it sounded like a lot of criticism. So I just learned from a very young age just to how to shut down, you know, not express how I feel, not express if I need something, you know, just do whatever the adults were telling me to do. And that would be okay. Like, it would keep me from being, you know, criticized and just, you know, I just thought, I just hated like all these adults would tell me what to do and how to live my life, you know. And I had an aunt that lived with us. She ended up living with us for 12 years. And she was very religious, and I was afraid of her. Okay. She would say things like, you know, if you're not good, God's going to punish you. If you wear makeup to school, God's going to punish you. If you talk to boys, God's going to punish you. If you don't obey your parents, God's going to punish you. And so I grew up being afraid of God. And I grew up thinking that if I'm good, then good things will happen to me. But I have to be good. Like, I have to do everything good, you know. And that was really a hard way to live. And so, and as a, at a very young age, like, there was always food in my house. Like, all of my aunts, they're great cookers. They cook really good stuff, like tamales, rice, beans. Like, every night we had rice and beans and tortillas. Like, that was always part of our meal, right? And then we had, like, a protein, you know, a lot of deep-fried foods, a lot of, you know, enchiladas. And, like, the kitchen was always open in our house. So just from a young age, I just remember using food to feel better. And as a result, I was an overweight child. Overweight child my whole childhood. My mom told me that I was the only child of all because, remember, there's three younger sisters. And then my aunt had her daughter, so there's like four kids. There's like five total. She said I was the only child out of all the children who would ask for seconds. And then she said I always had a pacifier in my mouth, and I always had a pacifier in my hand. So, like, I always wanted something, like, to eat something, you know? And so as a result, when I was about 15 years old, I discovered eating and throwing up. Somewhere in high school, I discovered it. I don't know. I was really good at it. Really good at it, okay? I thought I had found the solution to my problems, okay? And I remember in high school, like, I was the locker room monitor. So, like, my job was to monitor the locker rooms while the girls were at gym, and I would go through your lockers and I would steal your money out of your lockers so that I can go down the street and go eat like burger fries, chili fries, and my shake so that I can have like a really big lunch. And I didn't care that I would steal from you so I can use it to buy food. And so when I discovered eating and throwing up, like, I practiced that behavior every day. Like, it just became a habit for me. Like, for me, okay, so when I discovered that, I also asked my mom to take me to a diet doctor when I was about 15, 16 years old. And this doctor gave me amphetamine pills. And I lost about 40 pounds. And when I went back to get more pills, he wouldn't give me any more pills. And I was devastated, because I loved how they made me feel. And more importantly, they took away my appetite. Like, how was I going to maintain my weight loss, right? And so, and that's when I discovered eating and throwing up. And so I just learned to live that way for a very long time. It just became a habit for me. When I would, you know, I would wake up and I would say, okay, today I'm not going to throw up. I'm not going to do it today. I'm not going to do it, you know. I'm going to be really good today. And then something would happen. I would eat just a little bit too much, and something would trigger in my head, and I would just go straight to the restroom and get rid of it. I would get rid of it. And I would do this a couple of times in the day, and it was exhausting. It was so exhausting, you know. And it was like I had two lives. It was a very secretive lifestyle for me. Like, nobody knew. Like, my sisters didn't know. At least I don't think they knew, because they never said anything to me. And so that was a behavior I was practicing. I worked for the airlines, and I would be working first class. I would feed all my passengers, and then I would go and just binge eat all the food in first class. And we have really good food on the plane. We have, like, sundaes. We have, like, I mean, really good food, you know, steaks, rice, bread, nuts, I mean, and I would just binge. And then I'd go in that little lavatory, on the plane, 30,000 feet in the air, and I would get rid of it. And then my eyes would be all red and watery, and then I'd have to, like, go and fix my face, fix my lipstick, and I would just pray that I wouldn't run into a colleague, you know. And that's how I lived. It was unmanageable. Like, my life had become unmanageable as a result of my compulsive eating. You know, I had zero peace. I had no peace at all. If I wasn't in the food, I was thinking about the food. I was thinking about, like, my next binge, you know. I would think about, like, I got to take certain foods on my layover, you know, so that I could be comfortable and just feel safe. And so so that's how I lived for many years. I got married, and my husband didn't even know that I had this problem because I was really good at hiding it. And then I got sober in 2005. Okay, God struck me willing, and I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got sober, and God removed that obsession for me. But like I said, I was eating and throwing up in the rooms of AA. And at the time, I told the sponsor, and she said, "Well, I know someone that you can go talk to." And her name is Leslie. She's in this room now. And Leslie has a reputation for saying yes to sponsoring, okay? And she was not my first choice. I was afraid of her. She was not my first choice. I asked two women before her, and they both said no. I was so hurt. You know. I thought everybody said yes to sponsoring, you know. That's how I was raised. You just say yes. If somebody asks you for help, you say yes. So when two people said no, I was, like, so hurt. So I knew what I had to do. I had to ask Leslie to help. Because, you know, I put everything aside because I really wanted to get well. Like, I saw her life. I saw her. She was, like, bright, shining star. Like, not a care in the world. And she's stunning and beautiful. And I wanted what she had, you know. And I asked her to sponsor me. And, of course, she said yes. Thank you so much. Changed my life forever, you know. She got me really busy. In this program. She told me I had to go to regular meetings or regular meeting days. And then she got me really busy in the steps, really busy working steps, really busy in service. And I was just so desperate. I was just willing to do anything that she said. And I started my journey here, And so she had me do a list. So, because when I came into OA, like, I didn't know the proper way to eat. So I had to learn proper portions. I had to learn, like, a new normal when it came to eating, right? So she had me look at the dignity of choice, and I chose a food plan out of the dignity of choice. And it showed me the proper measurements for food because I didn't know what a proper measurement of protein is, you know, because I'm a compulsive eater. I can overeat, you know, chicken if you're going to give me a lot of chicken, right? So for me, like, you know, for me today, I do practice a weighed and measured food plan because that's what works for me. And so I chose my food plan out of the dignity of choice, and then she had me do a red, yellow, and green column list of the foods that, you know, the red list is our foods that make me want to compulsively eat, which, you know, for me are very obvious. You know, any flour and any recreational sugar is under that list. And then we had the yellow column, foods that some days I can eat like a lady and other days I can't. You know, that could be maybe nuts or, you know, popcorn or cheese. And green are foods, you know, that don't, I have no effect on me. You know, the vegetables and a lot of fruits and so forth. And so she said, okay. We went over the red list, and she said, okay, just for the next meal, you're going to abstain from this from these foods. And really, I had to do it like one meal at a time, you know. And I had to plan my meals. Like, I had to plan my meals. I couldn't just wing it, you know. So when I started to learn, like, a new way of eating and, like, foods that set off the allergy for me, because really inside me, I have this allergy where I cannot have certain foods. They just, they set off the phenomenon craving for me. And that's just my truth, you know. It says it in the big book that I'm in a different entity as a normal eater, you know. Like, my sister can eat half of dessert, and she's like, oh, I've heard her say things like, oh, it's too sweet. What? Like, if it were up to me, like, I would just eat the frosting on cake. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I like it. Like, that's sweet, you know. And anyway, so for me, like, I had to abstain, like, a meal at a time. Okay, so that was in 2009. And the obsession to eat and throw up got removed. It was removed immediately. I don't know how it happened. It did, you know. I just got really busy doing the work, and God, like, removed it, you know. And so I've been here since 2009, and I wasn't willing, you know. It says it in here that I have to be rigorously honest. And if you're not being honest, you're just wasting your time. Okay, I wasn't rigorously honest with my foods. You know, I was still using certain foods for an effect. You know, I was still using, like Cheetos. Like, I would eat two nutritious meals, breakfast and lunch, and then for dinner I would use it as an excuse to, like, oh, I had a hard day, and I would eat, like, my Cheetos, my sugar-free candy, and I did not feel good about it, and I had sponsees, and I was telling, you know, Leslie, and she'd be like, just ask God for the willingness, you know. I kept asking God for the willingness, you know. But deep down inside, I just, like, didn't want to feel uncomfortable, you know. I did not want to feel uncomfortable. So what happened? So what happened was, I finally, you know, I was, like, emotionally bankrupt. I was having a really hard time, you know. It was, like, 2019. I have a mom that got sick with Alzheimer's, and it felt like my life was going to get harder, you know, because I was a big part of my mom's life. I was starting to caregive for her a lot, and then I was still using, like, certain foods, and I was going to a lot of meetings I was sponsoring. I just wasn't being honest, you know, with myself. I wasn't being honest, and there was no peace within me. That's, you know. Because Leslie was fine. It was me. Like, I had no peace inside. And so I needed to work the steps again. Like, I needed help. I was dying emotionally. And then I got in a long-distance relationship, which made my life really hard also. Just a series of things that happened in my life that became really unmanageable. And so so at that time, I changed sponsors, and, you know, we worked the steps again. This time I discovered this phone meeting, and I know phone meeting, right? How weird is that, right? Like, what? COVID hit, and I discovered a phone meeting, and I was calling in every day, and, they read a paragraph out of the big book, and then they share, and it was exactly what I needed at the time, because I was dying. I was dying emotionally, you know, and so... So shortly after that, I got a sponsor, and she took me through the steps out of the big book, and we worked out of the big book with my compulsive eating, and it struck me abstinent. Like, when I got the sponsor, she wanted me to commit my food to her, and she wanted me to, weigh and measure. And she wanted me to eat dinner food for dinner. Like, I was eating a lot of breakfast food for dinner, and so... And then, so I got her, And then at the same time, my sister got diagnosed with bone cancer. My sister is 5 years younger. She got diagnosed with bone cancer. And, just a lot of really hard things were happening in my life. And so my sister needed me to go help her. So I went to go stay with her in Colorado Springs because she had a stem cell transplant. So she needed my help. I had to prepare her meals because she could not be in the kitchen because it could run a risk of her cutting herself. So at this time, I asked this new sponsor to sponsor me, and she's taking me through the steps. And she had me called her. She had me call her 3 times a week. And when I called her, I had to have my assignments ready. Okay, so, you know, I didn't call her to see how the day was. I had called her, and I would read her my step work. So this is all going on when I went to Colorado. And then at this time, she had me, you know, send her my food. And at the time, I was using a certain food still for an effect. Yeah, I was eating, like, up to three servings of cornflakes every day. And she said, okay, while we work the steps, can you not eat this item? I was like, oh, I don't know, you know. And so I said, yes. I wanted a new experience. You know, I had been in OA since 09. I wanted a new experience. And so I said, oh, why not? You know, I'm going to try this. And so I went to Colorado. First day I show up, I open my sister's pantry, and there's, like, the box. And I was like, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. You know, I'm going to go to the food. I text her. I said, hey, will you still sponsor me if I eat the cornflakes? Still, it's like, it's here. Cornflakes is here. And she said, no. And then I called a friend, and my friend said, remember, Veronica, you said you want a new experience. And I was like, okay, right. I want a new experience. Okay, let me just eat my dinner that I planned. Then I had my evening snack. And I had 1 day of not eating that item. And then the next day, something else happened. You know, her husband was drinking a lot. I got so angry. I was so angry. You know, and I called my sponsor and I said, I don't think I'm going to make it. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm going to, you know, I don't think today I'm going to eat this item. And, you know, she told me to focus on my higher power's power, to focus on that power, to ask God for help, and to thank God that that's not my food today. And that's what I did. And I didn't eat it. The second day, I didn't eat that food item, you know. And every day, it just got, like, a little easier and a little bit less uncomfortable, you know. And she did say one thing to me. She said, you know, after we work these steps, if you still want to eat this food, you can eat it. But let's just not eat it while we work the steps. And I said, okay. I finished working the steps, and the obsession to eat that item was removed. I don't even want that item today, even if I could have it. That showed me, like, I have a serious allergy to certain foods. And for me, it's really the first bite that gets me. And today, as a result, like, I experience food neutrality. What does that mean? For me, that means, like, food is not calling to me. To me, like, I can be in a room and there could be full-on cakes and, like, just a whole buffet of food, and, like, it's not calling to me. You know, I have a regular food plan. I don't change up my food plan, you know, like, I know what works well for me. You know, there's certain foods that I can't really mess with because they're just too delicious, you know, and I know what those are. And so I keep my food plan really simple. It's just the more simple, the better for me. And I have to prepare my meals. I cannot stress the importance of it. You know, I prepare my meals. I cook my meals. I measure my protein and my grains because I can easily overeat that stuff. Even till today, like, even though, like, I don't You know, I don't think about food the way I used to, but I can easily eat 3 cups of rice if I wanted to. You know, three cups of potatoes. Easy, you know. So this way, and you know, when I finish eating, like, I just ask God, like, God, please, like, just help me feel like it's enough. You know, because sometimes when I, you know, see my plate, I'm like, oh, before I eat it, oh, it's not enough. You know? And I finish eating, I have my water, and it's enough. It's enough, you know? And so for me, you know, I have my food plan, and then I'm very busy in service and in Overeaters Anonymous. I go to a lot of meetings. I have, like, so I go to a meeting every day. I still go to that phone meeting. You know, for me, like, just reading a paragraph out of the Big Book every day, it just keeps me, like, in the solution. It keeps me in the hope. It keeps me in, like, good things are coming my way. Like, I can't wait to see what happens next, you know. Because on my own, like, I wake up, like, I don't want to do today. Like, it's too hard. Like, things are too hard. I don't want to go interview another caregiver, you know. I don't want to go and tell this other caregiver she's doing it wrong. Or I don't, you know, want to go kind of go and see if I can give my mom a shower. She doesn't like to shower. She has Alzheimer's. So I don't know what it is. She doesn't like showering, you know. Like, these are the things that feel really hard. So I need to tap into God's power every single day, you know. And so my routine is, like, I go on to this phone meeting every day. I just call it, and I'll put it on speaker, and I'll just, you know, or I'll listen to recordings. There are tons of recordings. And then I have my committed weekend Zoom meetings that I do. And I'm always saying yes to sponsorship, because that's what I was taught here, you know. And that's really what keeps me, like, in the middle of Overeaters Anonymous. I don't compare my food to other people's food plans, okay? Just because a friend can have this item doesn't mean I can have it. Like, I know today what I cannot have. You know, I did a lot of that before. Like, I would compare, and it'd be like, oh, you know, she can have it, I can probably have it. That's not my truth, you know? Like, I know for me, what sets up the phenomenon of craving, and so that's why my food plan is very simple. Now, I still work for the airlines, and I travel all over the world. Most of my routes are international, like LA, London, or Australia. Those are very long flights. So what I do is I always take my food on the first leg. So I weigh and measure my food, and I take it with me. And then when I get to my destination, there's some destinations where they don't let you bring any food in. So immediately when I get to my hotel room, I go to the grocery store and I get my abstinent food. And I get enough food for, you know, 48 hours. And I take it on the plane, and, you know, and that works really well for me. I try to eat and stay on my body time, like when I go overseas, because I could eat a meal and then I'll think I'm hungry 2 hours later. And I'm not hungry. I'm just uncomfortable about something, you know. And how do I stay spiritually fit? I do a bunch of 10 steps all day long. All day long, spot checks, you know, all day long, you know, I get resentful, or I get afraid, mostly afraid because of, you know, really hard things in my life, like my mom's Alzheimer's. Like, I get really afraid, you know, caregiver quitting and not giving 2 weeks notice, just sending me a text. And December 3rd, I had a caregiver. She worked for my mom for 4 years. She worked 40 hours a week. And she sends me a text on a Monday night at 7 p.m. like, oh, thank you so much for letting me care for your mom, but I decide I'm no longer going to care for her. 7:30 at night, 7 o'clock, she sends me this text message. And I was pretty devastated, you know. First thing I thought of was, like, how is this going to affect me? Like, now I got to rearrange my whole life, you know. But the beauty about, you know, my mom is, like, we get to keep her in her own house. You know, that's, like, a blessing, you know. And we have a lot of caregivers, and this is just the nature of how it's going to be for a while, you know. It's not forever. So I used to have such a bad attitude about, I used to have this attitude like, it's not fair. It's not fair that my mom's sick. It's not fair that I got to take care of her. It's not fair, you know, it's not fair. Because then I would talk to some flight attendants and, you know, I flew with a girl the other day. She was 79 years old and she's still flying. 79, that's only 3 years younger than my mom. You know, my mom's here dependent on other people because of her illness, you know. So, yeah, sometimes I would be like, it's not fair. But I've changed that. Like, because of these steps, because of this way of living, like, I've changed my thinking. You know, that's part of the hope here. Like, if you do this work, you will change how you see life and you will change how your thinking and your belief system. I have changed all that. Today, I'm excited to go see my mom. I spent the whole day with my mom today. So I went today to her house with the goal of giving her a shower because it had been 7 days since my mom showered. Like it's really hard to get her in the shower. And the caregiver that quit, she was able to get her in the shower. She's the only one that's able to get her in the shower, you know. I don't know about you, but just knowing that my mom took a shower makes me extremely overjoyed, happy. Because I know how good I feel when I shower. You know what I mean? So it had been 7 days. Because there's days when she's like, no, I don't want to shower. No. You know, and so we don't force it, you know. But I went over there today, and I got her in the shower. I got her in the shower. And we were in there for about 20 minutes. And that's what filled me right up. Like, I feel like I'm walking on water. I feel so good, you know. Because today, like, you know, I have a purpose today. I know today my purpose is to help be of service to my family, you know. And it's not forever. It's not forever, you know. And I still get to hold my mom's hand. I still get to, you know, tell my mom stories and read to her. Even though, you know, she can't read back to me or she can't, you know, she doesn't know who I am, but she feels my energy, you know. And so, you know, things like that, how I used to think were such a burden, are a blessing. They're a blessing. Like today, I just want to give back, you know, and it's really hard work. It's such hard work, but it's so rewarding, you know, and these caregivers, like, it's so uncomfortable for me every time I have to interview a new girl. And sometimes I'm even uncomfortable, like, in my own mom's house around the caregiver. I don't know why. I just am. I just am. And, you know, this program really has given me the ability to have awareness, know when I'm feeling uncomfortable, and then that moment, like, just ask God for help. You know, go outside, take a breather. You know, really, you know, things that I used to think were a big deal, they're not a big deal anymore, you know. And, you know, my relationship with my sisters are so beautiful. Like, I adore my sisters. You know, I used to get so hurt by one sister in particular. She would always hurt my feelings, you know, because she could be a little direct. And, but I really looked up to her and I really, really valued her opinion. And she used to really hurt my feelings. Leslie helped me so much to learn how to talk to her and to tell her, you know, organically when she was hurting my feelings. And that has changed for me today. And she has changed with me because I changed. You know, I have changed how I interact with her, how I respond to her. I know today that the problem is me. I am the problem, okay? And I know that change only happens when I change. I changed. I spent all day with her today. My sister went, my mom and I. So I take my mom to the cemetery like once a week to go visit my dad, and we put fresh flowers on his grave. And she just loves it, you know, because she likes to get out at least once a day. And then we feed the ducks. And that's what we do. And she loves it, you know. And my sister went with us. She usually doesn't go with us. She wanted to go with us today. And I was overjoyed that she wanted to go with us. And I do spend a lot of time with my sister. And I'm doing a lot of, like, sister trips. Like, I'm spending more time with my sisters. Like, we're doing, you know, we're just spending a lot more time. Because today, like, I really value my family. I value my family so much. I do have one other sister that I'm not close with anymore. That's really sad. It's a really sad story. She, you know, she was living with our mom, and she wasn't helping out with mom, and she was making things harder for us. And mom was getting worse, so we had to have her removed from the house, and so she left. And, you know, as a result of that, it kind of divided the family in half. And that's so sad. It's so sad, you know. But my priority is my mom's common welfare. Like, as long as I'm putting my mom's welfare first, like, that's all that matters. I still am respectful to my sister. And I miss her. Like, I miss the big family gatherings that we used to have. And it's okay. It's okay. You know, when I see my sister, I'm really respectful to her. And her and my other sister, they don't talk at all. And I stay out of it. It's none of my business. I show my sister, like, respect and acceptance. And I feel really good about it. Because at the end of the day, like, at nighttime, like, I do review my day. You know, there's, like, pages between, like, pages 84 to 86 in the big book. It tells you what to do at night, right? You review your day. And then I always see, like, where could I have been nicer? Where could I have I paused? You know, because I really feel it at the end of the night. When I did something in the day that I might have hurt somebody, like, I really feel it at nighttime when I'm reviewing my day, you know? And so just getting in the habit of that helps me for next time, you know? Like my sister's birthday in September, we had a really great time. And then, you know, we were having a problem with some of the caregivers. They were using the excuse that some of them, you know, said that, you know, my sister could be a little harsh in, like, telling them how to do things and stuff like that. So I, you know, one caregiver on my sister's birthday was telling me this happened and my feelings got hurt, and I immediately got scared that she was going to quit. Okay. And so what did I do? I decided to tell my sister on her birthday, like, what this caregiver said. And, oh, my God, like, it hurt my sister's feelings so bad, you know. And so I felt pretty awful for about a week. I felt pretty awful. So this, you know, I made my amends. I told her how sorry I was. But you know what, though? I've never told her a thing about if a caregiver says something. You know what? I've never told her a thing anymore. Like, that's none of my business anymore. Like, we're all doing the best we can. I just know that it did not feel good how I treated my sister. Like, it could have waited. You know, it could have totally waited. So I don't always have common sense. But my experience is that if I just ask God for help, and if I am being honest about how I behave that day, then, like, the answers come. You know, the answers come, and then I share it with, you know, my sponsor. And then so that next time I don't do the same harm, right? Because I don't want to, because if I do harm to anyone, I'm the one's going to pay the price. I'm the one's going to pay the price. It's going to show up on my plate. It's going to show up on my plate, you know. How I'm living shows up on my plate. Really bottom line for me. And so I don't know what else. I mean, there's just so many amazing things that's happened to me. It's just, you know, I'm just really grateful that I know today, that I know what my problem is, and that I know what the solution is, and that I'm living in the solution, and that I have to, you know, I have to stay in the middle of Overeaters Anonymous so that I can feel connected, you know, to you, to God, to myself, you know, and I think with that, I'm going to pass. Thank you. Oh, we got 3 minutes. Okay. Yes. Hi.
power change when you were very motivated by a new experience in Asheville?
Absolutely, my higher power has changed. It changes every day. It's, for me, it was like a slow awakening. It was like doing the hard things, doing the really scary things, and then coming over on the other side and like, oh, everything worked out okay, you know. And it's just like every time doing a hard thing and like just trusting God and relying on God and seeing how everything turned out okay, then that just, it built. Like my dependence on God built over that. But when I worked the steps the last time and then committing my food plan, I don't know, I just got the power. Because the obsession for these foods, they went away. You know, and I used those foods for many years in abstinence, many years. And I wasn't okay with it for a long time. You know, so yeah, my God has grown and continues to grow. He continues to grow as long as I have to keep seeking. I have to fill my head with things that are spiritual. I do a lot of spiritual readings. I listen every day to some kind of spiritual stuff. In the car, I listen to 100.3. It's like a spiritual radio station. I do a meeting every day. Like, I have to get plugged in. I have to fill my head with, like, spiritual stuff, like goodness stuff. You know, read. I have my daily readers. Because it really puts me, like, on the right path, you know. And then I have to get really quiet, you know, because that's when, like, I really feel connected to myself. And I feel connected to God, you know. And just try to see, like, all the beauty, you know, so much beauty, so much. And just stay in gratitude. Like, the opposite of resentment is gratitude, you know, so... I am so grateful. And is that it? Okay. Thank you, guys.